So I wanted to begin today the topic of Lifnei Meshuras Hadin and everything that goes with it. It's both an interesting halachic topic, and it obviously has enormous implications for Jewish ethics. Lifnei Meshuras Hadin might be termed a catch-all term that would include, I think, all of these things, but it has any number of manifestations. One of them is just a straight-up, generic, general Lifnei Meshuras Hadin, which we'll take a look at the various cases in Shas. And then you have the concept of Pshara, which I'm not going to explore at length. That's really, we're going to do a Sanhedrin, it really brings a whole set of other things, but I do want to spend a few minutes on it just to explain what the idea of Pshara is, because I suspect that it's not what you think it is, or you haven't thought what it really is. Then we've already encountered a couple of the major, very specific dinim of Lifnei Meshuras Hadin, which is number one, Dina de Bar Metzra, which comes up briefly in the sugya that we're in now, Ravina and Ronya at the end. It's not really directly relevant to Makif and Nikaf, but it comes up here, and Tosis talks about it. And what we saw in Bekiyas and Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis is the concept of Kofan al Midas Sadon. Both of these last two are specific manifestations of Lifnei Meshuras Hadin, which one might argue are not Lifnei Meshuras Hadin because they're Din. What's the difference between Lifnei Meshuras Hadin and Din? Or that's an assumption that I'm making, is that Lifnei Meshuras Hadin should not be actionable. Because if it were actionable, what would we call it?
Din.
Rav Lichtenstein has an essay. It's in the volume on Jewish I think it's in the volume of Jewish Ethics edited by Marvin Fox and reprinted in Leaves of Faith about this particular issue, which is, we will see there's a machlokas where the kofin on Lifnei Meshuras Hadin, which should seem to be a stira minehu bei. How could you talk about kfiyah, forcing somebody on Lifnei Meshuras Hadin if it would no longer be Lifnei Meshuras Hadin? So we're going to talk about that as well. And then one last manifestation, which we'll touch upon as well, which is also relevant to our sugya, is, and it's a specific manifestation of Kofan al Midas Adom, so you could put it in those terms, but the Gemara itself never, as far as I know, raises that issue, which is Zenen Avizelo Chaser. Do you have the right to be Mocha? So we have operated with an assumption that, of course, you have the right to be Mocha, but that's not so clear. So Machlokas Harishonim, whether or not you have the right to be Kofa, or Mocha, I should say, on someone who wants to sleep in your chater, where you don't only don't rent it out. So we'll have to talk about that as well. So there are a lot of manifestations of this, and it's important in exploring them to recognize sort of what is the Torah's perspective on things. As I always say, because in a lot of areas, people's perspective is informed by their preconceptions, not actually by what the Torah has to say. And as you know, my feelings about that, economics is certainly one of them. There are many other areas. This happens to be an area where, at least in the, I'll call it the political arena, while there are any number of areas, where there are some areas, I should say, where the traditional, where the Torah position is in line with the conservative position, this happens to be an area in which it is most definitely not in line with a conservative position. So let's begin with the Ramban. The Ramban here has, I don't want to say, it's inappropriate for me to say one of the most important Rambans on Chumash, but it's one of the most important Rambans on Chumash. It has a twin, by the way. You know what the twin is? I'm sure some of you probably figured it out. What is the pair Ramban to this, the twin?
Kedoshim
to you. The common denominator of both of these, we'll read the Ramban, and I think you've heard this from me many times, but if you've heard it Me'ev Haman, you'll hear it Me'ev Achas, is that the Torah is a system of laws that we might say form a series of trees, but there's a forest as well. And it is a tremendous religious failing not to miss the forest for the trees. And while it's not always easy to provide what the exact details of the forest are, it is absolutely essential. And this holds true from Or Chaim through Choshev Mishpat. It is not, you know, if one were a quote-unquote a Reformed Jew, someone would understand this idea in Choshev Mishpat, but nowhere else. And there are some Jews who seem to grasp this in, well, I'm not sure which areas, but seem to lose it in Choshen Mishpat. So sometimes those people don't even keep the dinim of choshemish, but forget the lefnimish, which is in a choshemish. But the truth is that nobody has a monopoly on not observing even the dinim of choshemish. But obviously, to be a true Torah Jew, you have to not only pay attention to the trees, but the forest as well. So the Ramban has a passage here which deals with what you might say Choshe Mishpat, and he has a passage in Kedoshim Ti, or Marshes Kedoshim, the beginning, which most narrowly you might say deals with Yoredeh. So let's read that passage. I'll talk about it briefly, but let's start by reading the Ramban. Who would like to read the Ramban for me? Rami, go ahead.
אמרו זוב שרד ולפים משורת הדין. והכוונה בזה כי מתפילה אמר שתשמור כולותה ביתותה באשר ציפתה, ואתה יאמר גם באשר הוא ציפתה את תחין דעתך לעשות הטוב ישר בעיניו, כי הוא אוהב הטוב הישר.
Okay, so after the Torah delineates all the things that you have to do, the Eidos, the Chukim, Shpatim, now the Torah says even the things that the Torah did not command, you should pay attention to as well. Now, he includes in this Shara and Lifnim Mishur Sadin. Now, this is not exclusive. In other words, Shara and Lifnim Mishur Sadin seem to be a step beyond. But first the Ramban is stating that even those things God didn't command you, meaning the spirit of the law, or the spirit of the laws of what he's about to say, but I'll use the term Choshe Mishpat. So it goes so far as to include Shara and Lifnim Mishur Sadin, but that's not the sum total of it. So he explains, V'zeinyan gadol. Right, so that's a general problem. Right, whenever you write a law code, it's impossible for a law code to be exhaustive. If you know what that law code would require? Even if the waters of the sea were ink and the heavens were parchment, you'd never be able to write everything. Because you know what? Some yeshiva bachar is always going to come and find something in the gaps. You can't. It's not possible. So, and certainly not in a Torah which contains 5,800 and something psukim. So what does the Torah do? It gives you some trees, and your job is to construct everything in between. And he said, Aval Acharei.
Aval Acharei she'izkir mehem ha'adon lo t'ele krafir, lo t'ikon lo t'itor, lo t'amod atam re'acha, lo t'halel peresh, mitnei seba atakum, v'chayot sebehen, ha'chazar lomar v'derech pa'al she'yaseh ato v'ashar v'chol davar, ad she'ikhanes bazer ha'pshara v'chum yishrot adin.
Okay, so you have to observe the spirit of these laws beyond where they technically apply, and that goes so far as to include even Shara Lifnim Mishur Sadin, and then Uchegon.
Uchegon, Mashi is here with the Dina Bar Mitzran, Balfim Masha Amrum, Pirko Nae, the Diguru of the Napa Dimabril, Adshe Yikrabakoinian, Pamia Shara.
Okay. So he says, Shara Lifnim Mishur Sadin, and then even what they mention by Dina de Bar Mitzra. Dina de Bar Mitzra. And Afilu. And Afilu Pirkona de Dibur Nasabrius. Now, what's the difference between those two? You can translate them, that's fine. But really, what's the difference between Dina de Bar Mitzra and Pirkona de Dibur Nasabrius? That's a reference, by the way. You see the reference to the Gemara in Yoma. That's the Gemara in Yoma about Kiddush Hashem and Chil Hashem. That Ibn Torah, whose manner comportment is such that Pirko Noi v'dibur b'nachas amabrios, he has a reputation of being honest and upright, and he gets along with people, he speaks nicely to people. So that's the quintessential Kiddush Hashem. The Ramban says Achi Yikar b'chol nyan tam b'yosha. People know he's complete and straight. So that's included in this requirement as well. What's the difference between those two? Ari?
It seems like you're saying a few, it's kind of what we were talking about, that like the Bar Mitzvah, right? Is it really the Dean Mishra the Dean, or is it just the Dean? A few, because that one's less obvious. Like there's an obvious, there's a...
But why is Dina the Bar Mitzvah, I'll say, more obvious than Vafilu, Pirkanavidi Barbanasabrias?
The word isn't obvious, but like explicit, like you have to do it, you're
Okay, so you may be right in terms of din, but from a substantive perspective, why would one be sort of the next step? Okay, I'm sorry, you went. Rami?
I guess maybe din of the bar mitzvah, more, like, I guess there's something substantive to it. Like, there's someone who's going to have more, I guess not more land, but more,
The monetary, it's a tangible monetary issue.
Yeah, it's just speaking nicely to someone.
Yeah, right. In other words, look, there are people, I know people, who can be gruff and not always necessarily fun to be around. Okay, yeah, fun to be around, I put that in quotes. So fun to be around could be the guy who's saying great svaras in Targum. That could also be fun to be around. I mean, fun to be around is pleasant to be around. So you can have people who are not always the most pleasant people to be around, Camilo Sharp, but they're honest people, they're straight people. Your handshake counts, their word counts, and you would do business with them and you would entrust your life to them. So that's one mima. And then there's the mima of, and you also might even enjoy having, you know, I guess it's a glass of beer with them, or chas v'shalom, a Coke or something. So that's what the difference between Tina de Bar Mitzvah and Vafilu, even though it's not really, most of these are torts or mamanos of some kind or another. So this is really sort of a step beyond that. This is like cherry on the, you know, icing on the cake or something like that, or the cherry on top. So even that's included. Okay, so the Ramban has this idea that, like he does by Kedoshim Tiyu, Rashi quotes, Kedoshim Tiyu is you should be Prushim and Harayas. And Rashi seems to understand it means the Harayas in this parasha. The Ramban says no. The Kedoshim Tiyu means that the Torah prohibits certain sexual relations, the Torah prohibits certain foods, the Torah prohibits certain kinds of dibur. But you might say, okay, I will check off all those boxes. So I will make sure that my lavish kiddush with $10,000 bottles of whiskey will have such a hidurim, it won't even rely upon Ramosha's, you know, kulas of sherry casks. And I will, you know, the fish will be glatt kosher in the sushi. And I will go and I will enjoy myself, and everything's glatt kosher. It checks off all the lists. Everything on the list checks off. And then the person could speak, you know, I won't speak Lashon Hara. You know, I won't be Mechayif and Megadef. I won't be Holech Rachel. But I can talk like a Menuhal. I can use foul language. I can do all those things. Because it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that you can't speak that way. I can be vulgar. Won't do any Averis. And so on. And then, when it comes to sex, so the person can be Shatuf, I think the Ramban's language, Bezimas Nashav Haravos. Okay, he can be, you know, he can have many wives, and he can be steeped in sexual activity with them, and it doesn't violate anything. So the Ramban says, that's what we call a novel Brishas HaTorah. Kedusha means that the Torah sets up a series of prohibitions, and they're meant to create a certain kind of environment or a, there's a term for this. There is a term for this, you know, in legal contexts. A habitus, I think, is the term. Create a certain kind of habitus for which we're supposed to live in. And therefore, it's not that we don't allow anything. It's not that a person can't enjoy food. It's not that a person can't enjoy sex. But it should be with a kedusha. It's restrained a little bit. Hadish asmecha b'motor lach. Why? Because there's a spirit when the Torah prohibits these things. The Torah says, you can't do A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. But you understand there's some things between A and B also that aren't in the spirit of the law or in the spirit of the habitus the Torah is trying to create. So you should, you know, you're not going to be, you can't be punished by Beis Din, you can't say you're violating an Isser, but you should refrain from those things. You should be, the best way to put it is to be restrained. All right. Exactly. That actually is the third leg of this. That's the Orach Chaim leg, where the idea, what I always say, the most difficult halachic area in Shabbos is to decide when something is not Shabbistic. Right? But it's actually one of the most important things in Shabbos. Because you can keep all the lamites malachos, you can, you know, have all the hidurim and kiddush and the etc. and the mitzvah saseh and the mitzvah lo saseh, but you know you could do all sorts of things that were not Shabbos, that don't really, you know, aren't in line with the spirit of Shabbos. Some of them the Chachamim explicitly prohibited, right? If it weren't for the rabbinic prohibitions on Mekach u'Memkar, so your entire Shabbos could be, whole. Especially in a world, people who work in a white collar world. Right? If you're blue collar, it's harder to, than Shabbos. Really, malachas of Shabbos would really interfere with what you do. But if you're white collar, so you could really have not much of a Shabbos. And therefore, the Torah has specific requirements, and our responsibility as serious spiritual Torah beings is to sort of read between the lines and create this broader idea of Kedusha, of Lefanim Meshuvah Sadin, of Shabbosan. Okay.
If there's a specific mitzvah of Kiddush Tiyu or Yasisah HaTavayashar, so Lemaskana, is there going to be a difference between these two types of things? Meaning, something
between the Lefanim Meshuvah Sadin versus Kiddusha?
Or is it something that's explicit in Torah versus something which I intuit is part of its commandment of Kiddush
Tiyu? So there is a difference, right? In general, when someone asks a halakha question, sometimes something is technically mutter, not a good idea. The difference between something that's actually usher and technically mutter but not a good idea is that generally neither should be done. But b'shas al-chak, or in difficult situations, so then it's obviously much easier to be makel on something which maybe isn't a great idea but is technically mutter.
Why, how is it technically mutter if there's now a command in the Torah that I'm not a good?
Well, unless you assume that lefnei mishuras adin is something that we're kofen on, the answer to your question is, certain things are demands of God and certain things are encouraged. So, correct, but its contours are sufficiently ambiguous that you can't always pin them down exactly. In other words, if the Ramban says that he should have been shatuf, he shouldn't be shatuf. Bezimas nashav harabos. Well, how much is shatuf? Right. So the answer is, it might not be the same thing for every person. It might depend upon the individual personality what would be considered shatuf. And what would not. So it's hard to say, is one obligated to observe Kedoshim Tiyo Mesisir Hato? The answer is yes, you are obligated. Neither is enforceable. Certainly Kedoshim Tiyo is not really enforceable, not the way you would enforce a specific mitzvah.
That's because of lack of knowledge? If I knew 100% that something was part of Kedoshim Tiyo, then...
That's almost definitionally impossible. The only way something would be 100% is you had a specific issur. When the Torah says, be holy, so that's a kind of occult. It's trying to create a certain kind of habitus which you should occupy. But you can't say that this detail 100% is 100%. I wouldn't call it because of a lack. It's not because of a lack of knowledge. The obligation in the first place you might call, I don't know if you want to call it strategic ambiguity. It leaves, by its very definition, a degree of subjective judgment. And even if you think about the one case that I can think of in history where there was an attempt to, I'll call it, enforce Kedoshim Tiyu, it wasn't by enforcing Kedoshim Tiyu. You know what that was? If any of you can figure that out. Only one. Brian? What? Pilegesh. What are you talking about? In Egypt? So what did they do? Because there's a famous tshuva of the Rambam, but those were non-Jew. Well, there wasn't really pilagesh. So I'm not sure what you. So I'm thinking of something within Chazal, a takana, that did not prohibit, but it created sort of an incentive to be a little more holy, which was takana sezra. The reason the Gemara gives the takana sezra is kidei shelo yehi tamei dechacham mitzuyim itzel shasein kitar negolim. So it doesn't prohibit it; it just meant. I mean, there's a wild story in the Gemara. I don't know what quite to make of it. To see heich pashta takana zabi Yisrael, that there was a guy who was tovei and isha, Rashi says penuya for avera, and she says, Reka, do you have 40 songs which to be told? And he said no, and he was farish, which is pretty funny, right? Okay, so the point is that even there, it's not to say, you know, how much is too much. It depends upon the individual. It depends upon the situation. So I think that these very definitions, filling in between the trees, is a spiritual obligation incumbent upon every individual. But enforcement tends to be very limited. Look, in Vasisei Asher Vatov, the very same issue can be raised, which is, assuming the way, I don't want to say most Rishonim, it's hard to say that, but for those who say that we are not kofin on the Lefnim Yeshuas Hadin, but there are specific manifestations where we are. Kofin on the disadom and Dina de Bar Metzora are the two very specific manifestations where we force a person to do something. Right? We create an obligation. So those specific cases, in effect, are driven by the spirit of Asisa Hayashar Vatov, but then they are legislated or codified and become strictly obligatory. But they're not obligatory because obligatory qua din, they're obligatory qua Lefnim Yeshuas Hadin. By right, I should have the right to sell my field to whomever I want. But here, there's less. I'm going to assume for the moment that most Rishonim say with Kofen al Midas Sodom that it is a Takana Midrabanan. In other words, it's a specific manifestation of Lefnim Yeshuas Hadin, which the Chachamim declare to be din, with many limitations, but did declare it to be din. It's not surprising. The Beis Yosef is going to scratch his head, right, over the Mordechai claiming Lefnim Yeshuas Hadin is actionable. That doesn't bother him by Kofan Amid de Sodom or by Dina de Bar Metzora, because you understand that those are exceptions where I don't know there's a nafgamina. You could decide whether you formulated the Chachamim, turned that into din, or it's a case of Lefnim Yeshuas Hadin, but we're Kofan on it. I don't care which way you want to formulate that. But I don't think, I think as a general rule, the forest is not actionable, only the trees are. So when you ask a question, you know, I mean, you could ask the question. Let's say, I have this question recently. Someone asked me about adults riding a scooter on Shabbos when they're in an Eruv, not an electric scooter, and they're a distance away from the shul. That's part of the reason why. The weather's often hot, and apparently 90% of the people who in this particular neighborhood who live far away from the shul. There's a neighborhood closer to the shul, which is, as you might gather, more expensive, and then a lot of young people live in the neighborhood far away from the shul, and the question is, can you use the scooter on Shabbos? Now, what isser might there be using the scooter on Shabbos? The answer is probably none, if you're in a neighborhood. But there's something that strikes me as not Shabbos-tick about it. Now, would Beis Din enforce such a thing? I suspect the answer to the question is not. But if you ask Shaila, the answer you probably should get is, well, it's not usher, but you shouldn't do it because I think you shouldn't do it. It's not Shabbos day. So you would hopefully choose after asking the question. I don't think you can be told you've been given a psak because it's not usher or mutter in that sense. But I would hope that someone now looking for spiritual guidance would say, okay, so I subscribe to the idea of not doing things that aren't Shabbos day. And now that someone has given me guidance, so now I'm not going to do this. But would that be enforceable by Beis Din? I doubt it. You need a specific takana, I think, in order to say it's enforceable by a Beis Din, precisely because it's not the trees, it's the forest. Yoni? So one of the things when you look at people talk about this, it's a huge chiddush by a bike. And as Ben Ishchai, I think, permitted riding a bike inside the Erev Baghdad. But even if you want to ask for a bike, you're going to invent a gezeira, which is Shema Yisakin, right? That its chain's going to come off and you're going to fix it. You can't do that by these scooters. If these scooters break, there's nothing really you can do to fix it. So that's why they talk about this. In other words, a bike is one thing, but a scooter, there's nothing you can do. The wheels break, there's nothing to pump up. There's nothing to, you know, if it breaks, it's not something that, it's not like a bike where you can fix it immediately. So, okay.
What's the reason why certain mitzvos are? There's a lot of that's why certain mitzvos are explicit and like why at the end of the day we have forest. So you could have given us different trees and then we could have gotten the same forest.
I mean, so, I assume
are
he doesn't.
More important the ones that are explicit, or are they more relevant?
It's hard. He doesn't really address that question.
Right.
I presume it's like whenever you want someone to stretch a fabric around something, which is, if you're putting the frame around which they're going to stretch the fabric, you can't leave big gaps, and you have to have a sturdy frame. So I presume that these are the things that that help establish the sort of the signposts in a way that's most efficient for figuring out what's in between them. That's what I would guess. Brian? I think by its very definition, it's more subjective, right? And listen, there's a colleague of mine, and I don't understand this at all, who thinks that the Shabbos lamps are not Shabbos thing. Yeah. Most people, when this comes, it's like, what? I don't even think turning on lights is not Shabbos thing. It's just a malacha. Separate problem, a much bigger problem. In other words, for us turning on a light switch is not work, it's not labor, it's just like, it's using the light, so in some context, depending on the nature of the bulb, is a malacha, depending on how you hold the electricity, so fine, it's maybe yasser. But it's not that turning on lights itself is against the spirit of Shabbos. It's tremendous owning Shabbos, right? And you also don't want to waste electricity when you're not in the room. So turning it off, if it weren't any kind of malacha whatsoever involved in a light, in electricity, so I don't know why that would not be Shabbos lamp. So a Shabbos lamp is exactly that. I mean, you don't save electricity, but you want light, you don't want light, you want to sleep, you want to have room, you want to have light in your room, you want a shalom bayis when you're in there and you're awake, so you have light there. When you want to go to sleep and be able to sleep, so then you don't want to have light. So like, why is that not Shabbos? Now, you can agree or disagree with that particular approach, but you could see that clearly people, talmidei chacham of different stripes, don't look at it the same way, because I think it is more subjective by definition. Benji? In some cases it might. I'm not sure, but the challenge, it's a challenge that modern Orthodox Jews face. I don't know if I've told you this story. A very close friend of mine, so his grandchildren come up one Yom Tov morning after the Hashgamim, and they come up to our beloved associate rabbi, and they say, they're probably like 10 years old, and they say to him, can one ride, it might have been a scooter on Shabbos. So he begins by saying, technically it's mutter. Before another word gets out of his mouth, one of the two of them, or both of them, start jumping joy. Yes! They didn't wait for the but. Now, it might be appropriate for a 10-year-old. So there is a degree of judgment here. You can't rule out, that it might be that people will see things differently in a different society, different tekufa. Yeah. That's all, whenever you're talking about non-strict, halacha, when you talk about totally unrelated arena, you talk about certain women's issues. If you go to a culture in which feminism is not a thing, I'll put that in quotes, okay, some people don't like the term, they want to use a different term. You go to such a culture where feminism doesn't present a certain kind of challenge to religion, you may find that poskim would be, I think you find situations are more makel, because they don't perceive it as a threat. Whereas in a highly charged context where there's a war going on, so then you dig in and you draw different lines. So by the same thing, I don't doubt that one's perception, look, I went to a meeting, a nefesh meeting, there's in Israel, as parents of a new Olah. To get a little oriented and so on, what our child will be going through. So before we left, we asked the person anything else we should be asking. We were talking about all the details of chuyot, of college, et cetera, et cetera. So he said, it's an American who said, you have to realize that Israel is an amalgam of three different cultures, Eastern European, Russian, and Middle Eastern. It's not like the United States, which is like a Western European culture. You have to understand that when you ask for something, in America, you go into the motor vehicle agency. They tell you the list of documents to bring. If you bring that list of documents you're told to bring, and you go in, you will get your license or whatever you're going for. If you don't, they're not going to give you the license. But in Israel, that's not the way it works. You go in, and they'll tell you no. But that's just an opening gambit. They expect you to argue with them. Somebody is nodding their heads here, right? That's more experience than anybody else in the room. So you have to know that. Now, it would make me personally crazy. Right? It's sort of like, just tell me what I need. I'll bring what I need. Now that gets into, you know, that's in the Bein al-Khabera. When you bargain, when you sell, buy and sell things, there's, you know, I would say that there's a part of Middle Eastern culture, you have to shake your hand, you have to count your fingers after you shake your hand. Right? In the mid, you know, there's a sense, true or not true, in the Midwest of the United States, right, in the heartland of America, you give your handshake and that's your word. Is the Middle Eastern form, is that unethical? Well, the answer is no, not if everybody understands that's the way the system works. Now, that kind of behavior here, we would say, even if you technically didn't break your word, even if it didn't fall under situmta, right, minhaga sofrim, where the kinyan was technically binding, let's say, with the handshake, we would still say it's a violation of ethics. It's a violation of the mishras adin. But in another culture, that might be the norm. So there's no question that there are aspects of things. You know, look, even when we talk about conspicuous consumption, right, by definition, conspicuous consumption, unless you want to be an ascetic living in, you know, in a little cave in a desert, conspicuous consumption to some degree is relative. Right? My house is a mansion compared to anything pretty much any of our ancestors lived in, unless they were like nobility or royalty. And even then, I think my house is probably nicer, much better HVAC. Right? Now, but if you were to look around in Teaneck, I wouldn't say that I live in a hovel, but, you know, compared to a lot of houses in Teaneck, a ton of them, I do. Right? So when you talk about Kedusha, and whether building and living in a certain kind of house is a violation of Kedusha, conspicuous consumption, well, you can, you know, are you going to compare my house to that house in Teaneck? Are you going to compare it to some, you know, village in Bangladesh? So there's no question that some of these things are a product of time and place. No question about that. And it's hard to legislate that. It's hard to legislate that when it's both, I think, subjective in terms of time and place, and subjective a little bit in the eyes of the beholder. Right? What you hope is that when someone engages in these shikulim as an individual, that they're intellectually honest. They're intellectually honest. So, okay. But this is really, it is hard because, and I think it's true in every community to one degree or another, but the less Das Torah you have in a particular community, and I'm not saying that I may not subscribe to Das Torah in the sense of what should I do with my life. On the other hand, within the framework of what is in consonance with Torah versus what is not personal advice, it's hard when your people are accustomed to saying, well, is the mutter just Rabbi Tzfon or is it mutter Rasa? That's very hard to, you know, that leads to spiritual sterility. Okay. So anyway, so this is the Ramban, and this is really, really a foundational Ramban. Now, one question I'll ask you, but you don't have to answer right now, and we can come back to it if you don't answer now. Why is Pshara Lefne Mishuras Hadin? What is Pshara, firstly? I'm going to give you a little bit of help on this. A man walks in to rob and robs a bank, and he steals $1,000. And then the bank brings him to Beis Din, and Beis Din turns to them and says, Hadin atem rotzim o pshara? And they say pshara. You know what the outcome of the pshara is going to be? Go pay back the $1,000. Almost certainly. Din and pshara can sometimes be the same thing. That's why, so I guess I skipped ahead, that's why the Mechaber says, just like it's aser to be matah din, it's aser to be matah pshara. What does it mean? I didn't ask you, what is pshara, Gabe? Right. If it's compromised, what does it mean to be mata pshara? The purpose of pshara is to create shalom between the two sides. It doesn't matter what you eat. If you get the two of them to reach an agreement on what they should do, who cares whether you're mata pshara? Who cares if one side gave you a bribe? At the bottom line, you got the two to agree to a solution. They're both happy. So great. Who cares? So what's pshara then? What does it mean for pshara? If the question bothered you? You may not have seen. Did you see the source of friend? You probably saw it, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think about that? I wasn't suggesting pshara means you go down the middle. You're right. If pshara meant you go down the middle, you don't need a base for pshara. All you need to do is A plus B. If A is less than B, divide A plus B. A plus B divided by 2. That will work. That's all you need to know. Then you'll know what the right amount is. So what is pshara that makes it? And why is that lefne mishura sadin? I'm sorry? That's true. But what is, but as I told you, the bank comes and asks the person for the brings in Torah, basically award him $1,000. Why they're not mevatar and then there's zechuyos? Why would that be is the question. You could challenge that's the case, but Mekublani mi Rebbe, and I think it's clear that Pshara sometimes can have the same outcome as that. It usually doesn't, but there's a reason for that. So why would Pshara... So Ephraim at least does identify one important point. Pshara does mean that one side is going to be mevater on something they're entitled to. That's, by the way, why we hold Pshara requires a kinyan. Because if it didn't require a kinyan, it would be asmachta. If it didn't have a kinyan, it would be asmachta. Why? Because we didn't make a kinyan. I agreed to let the Dayanim judge, and I'll abide by their ruling. And if they say that, it doesn't matter. You don't know who's losing, who's winning. But one of the sides is going to be giving away something. One of the sides is going to be giving away something that they're not obligated to give away. And just because they said they would do it, that's only asmachta. If they make the kinyan now, that's a different story. A kinyan al tanai is valid. A das al tanai is asmachta. So Ephraim is correct in that sense. But the question is, what is the basis? What is the conceptual approach to Pshara that really ties it to Lefnei Mishuras HaDin? So we can come back to that when we read the sources. But that's what the Ramban ties these two together. They are part of Asisai Yashar V'Tov. They are not the sum total. It's not just Pshara and Lefnei Mishuras HaDin, but it's a whole series of things that you have to, you know, figure out that the Torah only prohibited X, Y, and Z, but you got to figure out the parts between X and Y and the parts between Y and Z. Okay, so now let's begin by taking a look at the Gemara's usage of Lefnei Mishuras HaDin. So Rami, read the Gemara Bava Metzia. Which is a pretty shocking statement when you first look at it. Right. So the reason why Yerushalayim was destroyed is because everybody insisted that they were going to get din. What is the Gemara's message here, of course? Ephraim? No. I don't think so. The Gemara's point is that in a society where people don't lift nourish as a din, it destroys society. I wouldn't call it a punishment, Ephraim. It's the law of natural consequences. It's the law of natural consequences. That a society in which people insist exactly on din will fall apart. Society only works because people have the ability and the willingness to be mevater some of the time. Okay, now here the Gemara does quote a pasuk, but interestingly enough, it doesn't quote the Ramban's pasuk. It quotes a different pasuk, which is Be'es Hamasa Shayasun. This is from the story of Moshe and Yisro. V'hudata lahem asaderech yel chuva Be'es Hamasa Shayasun. That's what Yisro tells him, and then he tells him pick judges to help you with this. So it doesn't quote the pasuk Rashi says Shabbat Hope. Elsewhere it'll be quoted, but not here. Brian. That's a nice ha'ara. I hear. Yes and no. Like the truth is, if no, I hear that's good. She's saying nice. I don't know if it's pshat, but if it's not pshat, it's very good drush. Karvel pshat. He's saying that the whole point of the story by Moshe was so that they could function, right? Navolti bo, gamata gama hamasharima. So Moshe Rabbeinu was told to appoint more judges, but he's also told that Ephraim is suggesting. So the Gemara says that derech yechuva I think is gemilas chasadim and something else, and a maser shayasun for the mishur sedim. These are the things that are mekayim society. So you need a system of justice. You can't just have one person doing it; it won't work. And you also need people to be vatranim a little bit. You have to be able to be mochal. You have to be like Eob was a vatran, so he was mochal in the seif pruta. Yes.
Are we all referring to dead din or people?
people. People. When you go into Beis Din, the Gemara Sanhedrin has a philosophical dispute as to whether Pshara is a good thing or not. We assume it is. But when you walk into Beis Din, not today, but once upon a time, Beis Din was supposed to ask you, do you want dinner or Pshara? And they prefer Pshara is a good thing. They're not going to, Beis Din will not force you to do Pshara. Pshara requires the consent of the parties. The reason why you need a kinyan for Pshara is because you're taking something away from someone who actually owns it for the other. You don't need a kinyan on Din, because Din is just trying to determine the facts, who actually owns the money. And once, even if Reuven has to give Shimon the money, he's just giving Shimon's money. So you don't need a kinyan on that. You just need to restore. But Pshara, you're taking away. But so Beis Din can't do that against the will of the litigants.
So you're kind of speaking about Pshara or Shalat Yishusadeh?
So no, I agree. What I'm saying is that I thought Beis Din, this is not Beis Din. It's two party. In order to do Pshara is a kind of for the Mishra Sadin.
I'm saying we all want to say that Yerushalayim was a story because people
load
down
and look
at Mishra Sadin, rather than just down Din Torah.
Yeah, in other words,
the people in interpersonal relationships didn't act.
Oh no, so I think this is Beis Din. No, this is in Beis Din. This is in Beis Din. But I think it means Shalodana Din Torah means the litigants weren't willing to do that.
They were not willing to do Pshara.
Correct. But everybody insisted, I want my due, I want my right.
Because I was wondering, can you use this Gemara as a raya that Lashem Shusadin is actionable?
No. No. That's why I don't even like the punishment thing. I think it's a natural consequence. When you have a society in which people insist upon their exact rights and there's no vatranus, it destroys, eats away at a society. So I can't function that way. I don't think it's an argument that you can be kofen on it. I can't prove it. I don't think this Gemara is a statement about Beis Din per se. It's a statement about a culture. Okay. So now, the next case, a specific case, because here's part of the challenge. I'll give you the mashal, although you know this is a case that was dealt with in the Gemara. It's really hard to know how to apply it. I remember I once gave shir on this at a shul in Tinek, and one of the Baalachim wanted to give me a ride home after Shabbos, which I accepted. It was on the other side, and he was fetching to me about, you know, he had hired this guy. I don't think the guy was Jewish, but he hired like a plumber, and the guy came in and he actually damaged stuff and didn't really finish the job, and the guy wanted to be paid. Now you would say, like, well, that's Meshuggah, whoever thinks that you have to pay that. But as you know, there's a case that's coming up. Now that's a very unusual case, but part of the challenge is, how do you decide whether something is Lefnei Mishur Sadin versus something is just totally ridiculous? As I gave you my example of the bank robber. Clearly, the bank robber, is not going to get away with a penny there. Highly unlikely. So, certainly, if he's not impoverished and he's stealing money to eat, so he has what to eat. If he's a middle class bank robber, he's not going to get away with paying a penny. Get away without paying every single penny. So the question is, what is it that characterizes? What there's din. This is a Lefnei Mishur HaDin, and then it's just being ridiculous. So the challenge is, how do you know? We know what Din is, but what's the line between Lefnei Mishur HaDin and ridiculous? So the Gemara Bava Metzia says, who else would like to read? Kindly volunteer. Alter. I feel this is a little bit, not exactly like the Verizon commercial. Like, can you hear me now? So it's only one case, but he's asking you in different places. Okay, if you find the anarchy here, what's the din? Right? Because this is on the Mishnah of Ev, in the Mitzios, when do you have to be machris, when you don't have to be machris. So he says, Harei L'Shalo is a code word for saying? No, that is what it says. It's a code word for saying? No, you don't have to be machris. The Mishnah set has two kinds of categories. Chayev lahachris, hore elu shalom. Or you could say, ain't chayev lahachris. But elu shalom means you don't have to be machris because the object belongs to you. The assumption is that there's yeyush, for whatever reasons, because there's no simon, because the way it's located, there's yeyush on the part of the bailam, and if you pick up an object after yeyush bailam, to whom does it belong? The picker-upper. That's the rule. So he said, hore elu shalom. Now, next, what happens? So the Gemara immediately says, or Rabbi Yehuda immediately says, Tarte. Tarte. What does that mean? Yeah, these can't both be true. If it's Hareyu Shalo, and then Abay Yisrael and Nasan Bosiman, so you don't have to return it to him. You can say, thank you very much. I'll enjoy your form, what was formerly your object now. So how can it be that Hareyu Shalo, but then if the Yisrael comes with the Sim, you have to give it back? So the Gemara, so he answers him. Shmuel answers him. No. Not chamre. Those would be wines. Chamare. If you have too much chamra, you'll have difficulty distinguishing between your chamra and your chamara. So chamara is donkey. It comes from the Hebrew. I mean, it's the Hebrew chamor. The vowel shift from kamatz to cholamale is what's called the Canaanite shift. And chamra is the word for wine. So he found the chamare in the midbar. He found, his father found donkeys in the midbar. And tell the Nimishur Sadin, right? After 12 months later, he wasn't obligated to return it when he found them. He found them in Midbar. And nonetheless, he returned them even 12 months later. Why? It was the Nimishur Sadin. So, of course, as a side point of Musar, what do you learn from this Gemara? That if you want your children to have a set of values, you have to live by them. Right? Notice that it was Shmuel, father, Avoy the Shmuel, and Shmuel. Right, so he saw his father return these things. So Shmuel also understood that technically, Harelu Shalom, but nonetheless, if the Mishra said in, you have to return it. Ephraim. Say that again?
How is it that he was able to keep it, but it was still in the head of Simon?
I think it's because it's a Simon, which is Asir Bidares. In other words, it's likely, you know, when it falls there, it's going to get trampled, and therefore the person is miyayish, because they know even though there's a simon, it probably is not going to be there. And they come, and then they come and tell you, and so it turns out. Okay. Now, there's one very important nakuda here that I think the Beis Yosef kind of missed in this Gemara, but the Bach calls him on it. Is the Lefnei Mishur HaSadin actionable? What does it say here? By Yisrael v'nashan basiman mahu. It says chayiv lahachzir. It's kind of interesting. And he says l'fnimish after Rav Yehuda asks him tartei, he says chayiv lahachzir because l'fnimish resadin. But he doesn't say, oh no, you're not chayiv lahachzir. I mean, his formulation is chayiv lahachzir. Sounds like you're really obligated to do so. Okay, now you... Yes, Ephraim. I'm going to say that again? So you want to argue that... I mean, it's just a very funny... When we say... probably everywhere else when we say Chayiv L'Hasir, it's actionable. In other words, if you say chayiv, then generally, unless you say, there is a category, I didn't put it on the Makoros, I occasionally do it, I mention this in a public share, there's a category of people who are chayiv b'dinei shamayim, patur b'dinei adam. Right? That's a madrega up. The Gemara Bava Kama in the beginning of Perek HaKone says, the four people who are patur b'dinei shamayim, it's poetz gedol fei behemes chaver, socher ide sheker, Kofev Kamaso, Shechaver, Eish, I forget what the fourth one is. So there we say, Chayev Bedinish, Pata Bedinish, Chayev Bedinish Shemayim. So there I understand, based on one portion, because we say Pata Bedinish Adam, but when you say Chayev, Chayev Hase, that sounds like Chayev, and if you don't do things that you're Chayev in, based on what makes you do that. That's what that would have been, that's the simple reading of the Gemara. If you want to avoid that, you're going to have to say something like there is. It's still very strong language, by the way. Because it's stronger, you know, there's the cases of, let's say, Chayiv B'dinei Shamayim, Patur B'dinei Adam, things where you technically get out from the Nezek for whatever reason, but clearly you're a Mazik. Clearly you're a scoundrel. Clearly you've done damage, but in a sneaky way that you could technically, well, I don't have to pay. So that's a little more obvious. That you know that's a case where I understand this chayav b'dinei shamayim. Here to say chayav l'hasa b'dinei shamayim is strong language. Right? I didn't do anything wrong. The object does eventually become hefker. So which case?
The case of the
baron. Oh, let's wait for that case. Okay, that's an odd case, right? And that's a, by the way, that's problematic also. But let's wait till we get there. Yes, so they're both difficult. Right? You can say the Beis Yosef doesn't feel compelled, but the question is. It seems to me the Mordechai's argument is a better reading of the text. But okay. Bavakama tzadi tes samedves. Whoever was reading that was altered. Go ahead, take one more. Okay. Right, so this is the George Floyd redux. Not exactly. Someone gave her a coin. Someone gave her a coin as a payment for something. And before she accepted the coin, she said, one second, I need to check whether this is valid or not. Now, it probably wasn't a question of counterfeit. It was a question of knowing whether the coin was whole enough to know whether the particular currency was still valid by the emperor's from the emperor's perspective. So she shows the dinar to Rabbi Chiya, and he says to her, Me'al Yehu, the $20 bill is not counterfeit. It's legitimate. Then what happens? Okay, so the next day, so she took the dinar, because Rav Chiya said it's a kosher dinar. Next day, so they won't accept the from her. She tried spending elsewhere, and they said, this is not valid. So I showed it to other people, I showed it to other people, and told me, Bishahu, it's no good. The lo kanafik. It's not yotze. The expression of currency being acceptable, of working, is the mos are not yotos. Okay? Obviously, mos are never yotos. Money does not get up and walk out. It means you can't be motzi'it. You can't use it to buy things. So then Amar Lei, go ahead. All right, no, nobody pronounces that way. Anyway, Apinkasi, yes, you know the correct pronunciation. It's Pinaxi or something. Pinax is a Greek word for a writing tablet. That's where it comes from. But we all say in the basement, Pinkas. So Ksova Pinkasi, he told his nephew Rab, or he said to Rab, listen, give her a good half dollar, take that one back, that's no good. Give her a good one, and write, meaning he was paying her, he was compensating her for the loss. And write on my ledger, Dain Asik Bish. This is a bad business to be in. Okay. So the Gemara then says, one second, go ahead. I think it's Dankub Isra, the two people, right? The Patiri, because they're experts. They're not lacking any knowledge. And if they make a mistake, they're potter. Because contrary to the way it works in American law, I mean, maybe not totally contrary, being an expert in halacha provides professional exemption. That makes you more potter, as opposed to having to carry malpractice insurance. Because the assumption is you train properly, and unless you are clearly grossly negligent, if you are trained properly and you have sufficient knowledge, the assumption is it's a good faith judgment, and you are exempt because we want to protect people. As long as they are properly prepared. That's the idea behind a dayan also. A dayan who's a mumcha, who's entitled to judge, is going to be patur, you know, the smicha provided you with a patur, precisely because those people won't want to judge. Who wants to accept that liability? We live in a crazy, we live in a meshugan litigious society. But it always was a worry. So the Gemara says, how come Ruchia had to pay? Ruchia nami lo lemirka boy. Ruchia also was sufficiently expert that he made a mistake. But that's what happens. Right, you go to a doctor uses his experience and his best judgment, he prescribes a treatment, and sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes it has negative effects. You know, because we're not always right. So why is it different? So the Gemara says, Rechia. Oh, so he was also, he only paid her because of the Mishra Sadin. By right, he was Potter. You just for your knowledge, as an aside, on what grounds would Rechia be Chayiv? Anyway. Let's say Rechia weren't an expert. Let's say he were an ignoramus when it came to coinage. And he gave an Eitzah. He told her it was good. On what grounds would he be Chayiv? What does he do? Dina de Garmei. This is mentioned in this context, the Dina de Garmei. Okay. Next, who would like to read? Yes, if I am. It's a takana, yeah. I believe so. Because I'll tell you what, the honest shouldn't really help you, that kind of honest. Because an adam is chayiv, onus.
So here also, the ikra garden is chayiv.
I think so, but then there's a professional exemption. And then he goes ahead and he pays anyway. Go ahead. Fran, you want to read next? We pronounce the third word correctly. Zabain. Zvain would be he bought, Zabain is he sold. So this is going to come as a little shock to you. There are circumstances in which a person's field is sold for cash because, let's say, they have to pay a loan, and if they then raise the cash, they may have a right to go buy it back. It's in this context the Gemara is discussing, not exactly that case. The Gemara is talking about what about a person who sold because they thought they needed the cash, and it turns out they don't need the cash. Do you have to let them buy the field back? So, assuming, let's say, nothing has happened in between in terms of you've improved the field and so on, which even if you could buy the field back, you then probably have to pay you what your improvements. But in the meantime, what's that? That you can buy if it was seized for halva purposes. You didn't pay a loan. That's a stronger argument for why you should be able to buy it back than here. And here you voluntarily, fundamentally chose to sell this field. Because you thought you needed the cash, let's say, and now you don't, as opposed to a case where you didn't consent to it, based and did it regardless of your wishes because you didn't pay back the loan. Maybe you couldn't. So the Gemara says, go ahead. So Rav Papa returned him. No, it turns out he sold his fields because he needed to buy cattle. It turns out that he didn't need it in the end. Either he won the cattle lottery or he decided not to raise cattle. And now Rav Papa returned him the field. You know, he gave Rav Papa the cash back, and Rav Papa returned him the field. So you see that you don't have to return the field. So the Gemara says no. He was doing lifnei mishra sadin. Okay. Next. This is one of my favorite stories. Go ahead. The Ofe, yes. There's an old English word here. If you look in the Sansino translation, it's a word we don't use anymore because it's become a slur, but I never heard of it except for in this context. A pasha de Ofe was translated a bundle of faggots, which must have been an old word that was used for wood. I don't know what the connection, how that became a slur. But when you translate it here, you change that translation. But it's kind of interesting. There are probably a lot of old English words that are not in use anymore, and you shouldn't use them anymore. But I remember taking that. Usually, when I teach this publicly, I usually use the Sansino translation because it's free. I mean, it's no longer the copyright, so it's accessible, whereas I don't really legitimately use someone else's copyrighted material. So this guy is carrying a bundle of wood, okay, and he puts it down. The komispach means. No. You can. I think it means more than that. It's like. That's the way you would describe komispach. Okay, now, time to go. So Amar Lei. Yeah, because it's preko teina. This is teina. So Amar Lei. He said, how much is the wood worth? Right? The reason why you have to help him is because he stands potentially to lose financially if you don't help him. He says, how much is the wood? He says, half a zuz. So what does he do? So what did Rishon Rabbeus? Rishon Rabbeus didn't want to deal with this. So what he did was, to save himself the tircha and everything else, he pulled out a half zuz and gave the guy half zuz and says, okay, I'm buying the wood from you. You don't need to, you know, I'm not chayavatin anymore because you don't have the wood. The wood is mine. Go have a nice day. You know, you can leave the wood there. And what does the guy do? So wise guy goes around and then once again makes a kinyan on the wood. And he says to Rishon Rabbeus, give me a hand, please. So what happens? That's the same thing. Okay, Rishon Rabbeus is not stupid. As Rabbi Dulitz always told us, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. So, he decided he was going to try to be Zohar them again. That's what he's going to do. And so before the guy could be Zohar, and I assume, the truth is the story is told funny, I assume that when he was Mafkirit, if he was Mafkirit again, there's nothing he could do. Presumably he won't make the mistake a third time, but it means he was about to be Mafkirit, and he sees the guy waiting, it's like, oh, I'm going to go do that. And then, before he does that, he says, so he's mafkir for everybody except for that guy. So now what does the Gemara say? Okay, so this requires, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but this is a very strange Gemara. The idea of that hefker, the machlokas by Shammai by Hillel, is not strange. That's expected. It's a machlokas by Shammai by Hillel, what the paradigm, what the makor for hefker is. According to Beis Hillel, the makor, the model for hefker is for hashviyas tishmetena unetashta, the shviyas in which the produce of the land is hefker for everybody. That's the definition of hefker. And Beis Shammai learned it from leket shechempeh, which is hefker lanim only. Why does it? This is very strange. The purpose of that debate, Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, whether determining something is truly hefker, with the shem hefker, is what's the nafkamina that emerges from it generally? Trumas and maestras. Hefker is part of trumas and maestras. But if you say that hefker la'anim, where it's only hefker for la'anim, is not called hefker, then it's like you gave a matanah to whichever ani picks it up, and it is chayav in trumas and maestras because it wasn't hefker. What's odd about the Gemara, you can be, can I be mafkir something according to Beis Hillel only for the guys on the left side of the room but not for the guys on the right side? And the answer is, of course I can. I can say the following. Anybody who's sitting from this point and to my left in the room is permitted to take my computer. It's hefker for them. It's not hefker for the five of you. Can I do it? The answer is, of course I can do that. And only the four of them can take it and the five of you can't. What I basically said was I gave rishus for the east four people to make a kinyan on my laptop. I could say that. I could say the following. There are some people in this room willing to have my laptop as a gift, and some people not. And Shui and anybody around you, I don't want that. Of course I can do that, and it's mutta for these four people to take it. It's not officially hefker in that sense, but it functions as hefker. Because the only nafkamina of whether it's truly hefker should be whether or not, I mean, you could come up with nafkamina chametz b'pesach. Right, if I'm mafkir this chametz only for the four of them, maybe it's technically still mine. In other words, maybe it's just rishus to make a kinyan, and therefore I violate by or by matzah. So supposed to say it's hefker for anybody, you don't violate by or by matzah. But here, the issue is simply whether the guy could be chozer b'zocha another time. So I don't know why the Gemara asked the question for Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So the Gemara answers. What's Gemara's answer? Right, so he was mafkirit, but he just told the guy, "But I'm mafkirit, but you." So he understood that really to be hefker, to affect everybody. But he's been making the guy, he's kind of pushing the guy off with something which isn't actually true. Okay, I just don't know why the Gemara. I'm not sure why the Gemara needs to say that. For our purposes here, it's not a big deal. You're saying the Gemara's kasha was only because he said he used the term hefker. But I would imagine, if I get up and say, this is hefker for these four people, I don't think it's, you know, I don't think we would say that because hefker normally means hefker for everybody, that this, if anything, then it's hefker for nobody. That's what I would have thought. Tosus had his comments. The reason, why was it that he was mafkir it in the first place? Why not just leave it there? He's afraid someone would come take it. It would be Gesa. Okay. So then the Gemara continues and says, so he wasn't chayiv in the first place to do it, so why did he bother? In other words, he could have looked at the guy that says, very nice, Sonny. I'm glad you're having a hard time lifting that onto your thing. But I'm an old guy. It's beneath my dignity to help you load up this bundle of wood. It's just tostage for me. It's a bizayim. So why did he do it in the first place? Why did he need to buy the wood? And then, you know, and then just to be mocked, he could have just said, I'm sorry, I'm a zakeh, but it's ainul lechichvodi. So the Gemara answers. That's very much a good excuse. You know why? So my rabbi explained, zakeh ainul lechichvodo is that if it was your object also in such a state, you wouldn't do it either. Anything that I wouldn't do for myself, and this is min chaver, l'mashal. Supposing there are two avedos that I see, one, they're both about swept away by the river. One of them is mine and one of them is yours. Which one do I save, Alter? Why? Is there a mitzvah shavas aveda for me and my aveda? Potential aveda? Is there a mitzvah for me to save your property, return your aveda? So why don't I have to do the mitzvah? It's not just you don't have to incur a loss. It's that shelcha v'shalachem, it's always shelcha kodmin. Why? Because I can't find this in Ramban. Rosh Hashanah quotes from Ramban. I think it's supposed to be in the second parak of Bamitzia. That all the mitzvahs ben al chaveiro are sort of outgrowth of the haftal reyecha kamocha, or governed by the haftal reyecha kamocha. By the haftal reyecha kamocha, your needs always take precedence over somebody else's needs. And therefore, zakeh mein lechichvodo means, if it were my own object, I wouldn't bend down, I wouldn't deal with it, because it would be zayim. So I don't have to be mevasa myself for you, if I wouldn't be mevasa for myself. So that's why he was zakim lechichvodo meant, it's beneath his dignity to do it, it's something he wouldn't do for himself, and therefore he doesn't do it for others. I have a habit that I don't do, partially because of an anti-Semitic association with it. If I see a coin on the street, I usually don't pick it up. I don't pick it up because there are anti-Semites. I've never had this experience where people told me, like, we're an anti-Semite, I'll toss a penny at a person, a Jew. You had this, I'll throw you, know what I'm talking about. Right. So I don't bend down because I think it's a bizayon to my cover to do it. I'm just going to leave it. Now, if it were a 1943 copper penny, maybe I'd think differently. But short of that, so it's exactly, it gets ain't a, so that means I don't have to bend down to pick up your penny either. Because I wouldn't do it for myself, I don't have to do it for you. So, Rabbi Shmuel didn't really have to, but the Gemara says, why did he do it then? Go ahead. He really didn't have to, but he did the Mishra Satan. He could have said to the guy, I'm a Zachim and Chodo, I'm really, talking to the Gemara's kashas, it sounded like he was Zachim and Chodo's Chayim. Why? So the answer is, he didn't have to, he just did the Mishra Satan. Okay. And one more, yes, Gabe. I mean, if I could find the Ramban precisely, I would have a better way of perhaps saying it. But I think that's general. That's a general rule by mitzvahs ben adam l'chaveiro that shalach hashal chavercha shalach kodesh. Yeah, I think so. I don't know how many.
But any time, but is it also that any time I would have done it myself, I would need to give someone else.
I think so.
I would not have wanted to be visited as a
follower. No. It means when there's an obligation in a particular scenario where I wouldn't do this thing for my, you can't, it's not analogous. It's not what I don't want to do. I wouldn't do this. I wouldn't pick up this aveda, right? For myself, I don't have to pick it up for you. That's different than saying, well, I wouldn't visit myself, therefore, saying that I don't care whether you visit me doesn't mean I don't have to visit somebody else. You have to, I think they're not, you know, you have to come up with an analogous case. Okay, one more story in the Gemara, and that's what we'll deal with, and then just we'll talk a little bit about if we can find some common denominator or something here. Go ahead. The problem. The shakulai. What are shakulai? What's that? Yeah, movers or porters. They were moving stuff. And you know what they did? They broke a barrel of wine. So what did he do? Means?
He took their cloak.
Mafilum in glima da al kasfai, from the shirt off my back, or the cloak on my back. So why did he take it? As a mashkon for payment. Because he decided they owed him money for the broken barrel. So what do these barrels, what do these guys do? They complained to Rav. They told them the whole story. We presume they told them the story. They broke his barrel. They said, we were moving his stuff. We accidentally broke his barrel. And now he took away our jackets. So what did Rav tell him? Give them back their shirts. That's what the Baal HaBayis told him. So then, so he says to Rav, what is this? This is the din? They broke my barrel. They owe me money for it. I'm just taking the shirt as to ensure that they'll pay me. So the Gemara, so Rav says to him, okay. It says, Laman telech b'derech tovim. It's a pasuk in Mishlei. It means that you should study wisdom so that you can go in the path of the good one, the good people. Continue. So he gives them back their shirts. Okay. So Amarulei. Right, and the last one, Midi. They say, we're poor, we've worked all day, even though they did a crummy job. We're hungry. Next week's parasha. Probably uchfinan. We're hungry and we have nothing to eat. This is what we call adding insult to injury. Rav said, go pay them their wages for the day. This is like, wait, you came, you didn't do the job properly, you didn't spend a lot of time doing that properly. You broke my thing, so it's one thing you don't have to pay me for it. I'll give back your shirt. Now you want to be paid wages? I mean, one has to say that on some level today, most of us responding to this would say, that guy's got some chutzpah. Right? Be glad that you got off the hook and you're not liable for paying the damages to the barrel. Now you want your wages. So Rav says to me, go pay him his wages. He says to Rav, how would you translate bina hachi? What in one English word? Let's see if you get the right sense of it. Good enough. I was thinking, seriously? But that one works as well. He looks at Rav incredulously. Dina Hafi? And the answer is? And I deliberately didn't stop there. Finish? Yes, I left that there on purpose. You know why? What's that? It is the end of the parak. And why did I want to stress that point? Because the Misadre Hashas chose to end the parak on this story. It's a very powerful statement. In a discussion of labor law, so we generally have an approach that says the Baal HaBayis has to treat us workers fairly, kindly, pay them in a timely fashion, and workers have to work in good faith for the owner. I always like to say it, I can't stand unions, but I dislike management even more. The point is that the Baal HaBayis is supposed to treat his pallim with dignity and fairness and pay them decently and appropriately and keep to the terms that he provided. And the workers are supposed to put in a full day's work, not to steal from the Baal HaBayis. The Rambam, in the last parak of probably Hilchos, whatever it is, Schivus, or whatever, where he deals with this, he makes both points. So the story is a strange story, as the Rishonim note. What kind of a rye is this? I think it's very important to learn Sefer Mishlei, but we usually don't learn Dinim from Sefer Mishlei. Tosis is bothered by the question, why does the Gemara in Bava Metzia by the Lachar V'Yushalayim quote Asher Tasun as the Makar for Lefnei Mishur Sadin? In all the stories that we have until this one, the Gemara doesn't say anything about why you have, just says Lefnei Mishur Sadin. And here, the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Mishlei, from Divrei Kabbalah. L'man teilech b'derech tovim, b'yerechos tzadikin tishmor. I mean, these workers were probably, Rabbi Rahanam was lucky, because there was no other halves of the pasuk to use. Otherwise, these workers would probably figure it out. Another question, none of the men, you know, they would have then asked for an extra special contribution to the pension plan, and then he would have turned to Rabbi, and Rabbi would have quoted the third part of the pasuk. So, I guess Rabbi Rahanam was very glad that Mishlei is generally speaking, you know, two halves of Sukkim, 98% of the time. But it's a very strange Gemara, yet the Gemara chooses, the Misadrim chooses to close the parak on that. It's a very hard Gemara to understand. At some times it seems incredibly unfair. Incredibly unfair. It's like, look, bad enough that you damaged my property. Okay, so you don't have to pay for it, but I'm going to pay you wages for the job that you didn't do? It's kind of stunning. But it's stunning, and as I told you about the person who was giving me a ride home, you know, I didn't tell him that you have to pay the plumber. You know, it's one thing to say not to charge him for the thing that he broke. But so it is a little bit hard to be holim, but we do have an obligation to think about it because we prefer to derive our values from Torah and from Chazal. And Chazal and the story are teaching us presumably something very important, even though it's a little hard to kind of wrap our minds around it. So anyway, the question of why the Gemara here quotes this pasuk, not Vasisei Shavato, why the Gemara in Bava Metzia Lamed quotes it quotes a pasuk, that pasuk, and then the other cases it doesn't quote any pasuk. Satosis in Bava Metzia Chaftal Amadeis actually talks about this particular question, but I'm going to stop here. If there are any questions, I will take them. Otherwise, we will pick up from this point tomorrow. Any questions?